Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we take a journey together in the form of sound and words and thoughts and thoughtfulness and thoughtlessness and wordfulness and wordlessness and joinlessness. And that will bring us together in the same way as heading different directions on the globe will have us meet eventually. Well, hello, friends. I would like to take this opportunity of being on the air visiting with you to read you a very special poem that I believe sums up all our lives, our human experience. It's a little poem called, I Was Born a Baby, I Lived, Then I Got Old and Died. And it really covers the entire experience, from soup to nuts, from that birth soup to the nuts of old age, when we're finally put in the ground, just like an old nut, except from that does not bloom or blossom or grow a tree, necessarily. What if every corpse was a seed? That's another poem by the same author, and I'm not going to read that one yet. But right now, I'm going to read this one. Here we go. I was born a little baby. I was unable to walk, and so I was carried by my mother, and also my father, and by other relatives like aunts, and some lady who asked to hold me, and then elderly people too, who often dropped me. But I was unharmed, and I went on to learn to crawl upon my knees until I was able to toddle. I toddled like the city of Chicago, a toddling town, and I wobbled until I was able to walk on my own. I walked then, a small child, for the first time in sand, and looked down and saw beside my own footprints, other footprints walking beside me. Hundreds, hundreds and hundreds of footprints all over the sand and beach. They are the footprints of the dead. All those gathered around me, walking now with me in my life as a small child, surrounding me, smothering me, as if I'm a small fish in the middle of a tight school of fish that aren't really in the sea, but in a small aquarium being forced down a chute so people can look at them and see their behavior. From then, I went on to school. In school, I was taught many things. How to communicate using cursive writing. How to use a bathroom that had other people in there as well using the bathroom. Not all in individual stalls either, which is very upsetting, which is why maybe some of us wet our pants initially, even though we were too old to do so, just because we were frightened to do a thing like that. That really is asking a lot of a shy child to pee in front of others for the first time, and others who didn't have that sort of respect for that child that those at home had. High school began another leg of that trip. And this time was spent in cars, and all that walking was unnecessary because you speed around in a little car and you throw things out of the window and you go through drive-thrus and you go to the mall and then you go back to your car and you sit in your car and you fall asleep in your car and you read in your car and then you drive your car to the airport. Not the proper airport, but to the small private plane airport where you can park and you can watch planes take off and land or do those touch-and-goes they do when they're learning to fly for the first time, sit there, eat a hamburger right there in your car, just like it was a drive-thru. They don't have those as much as they did in the times of our parents who sat and watched films in their car cinema. In their car with the speaker on the window. And there they would look up at the screen and see various body parts so large, larger than any truck or building. But you're safe. In your car, teen, oh, there, from then you go off and you get a house. And then you're able to purchase the game of life for the first time, which is ironic because it's really something you needed younger to understand how to go about getting a car and an education. But now you've got it. And it turns out it's not the traditional game of life that kids play, but that computer simulation that has a couple of rules where dots reproduce. And you realize it may be time for you to reproduce. And so you lock yourself away. You say, I refuse to reproduce right now because why would I do that to another creature, make them walk upon the sand covered with the footprints of the dead? I shall not. And so you join a religious cult and lock yourself away in a room, an anchorite, in a solitary cell, where you read from the holy book, which is just a compilation of Nancy cartoons. Strange. The first clue that others don't necessarily have your best interest in mind. Oh, the answers you search for. This is the period of your life where you walk in libraries and you say to the librarian, oh, I have come so far, and yet I know nothing. Please direct me to the section of the library that has pictures of naked people, perhaps. No? Okay, well, forget it. And you leave once again in search of the knowledge. Your first job. Your first job is always on a ship in the middle of the North Atlantic, tossed to and fro. Why am I here? What is my job on the ship? And you realize that your job on the ship is to clean up throw up. But your throw up is more copious than any of your shipmates. So is your job on the ship simply to watch out for yourself? Who would hire you to do such a thing? You realize that this workforce that you have joined being tossed about on a sea of uncertainty. You can no longer see the shore. It was an act of faith getting on this ship in the same way it was for that poor fellow who boarded the Pequod. Which one? Ishmael? Ishkabebel? Ish means man. Man of God? Or did you mean Queequeg? One who would wash his chest and hoist a harpoon of destruction over the wails of one's own mysterious and deep evil, the things that we keep buried and fail to acknowledge, which can consume us and destroy our entire enterprises. From there, we go on to have children. And once again, you have completed another cycle and brought into the world these babies that you barely remember being. And that's why, as the beginning of the poem begins to fade from your memory, all those footsteps in the sand, all those aunties holding you, the birth soup being wiped from your eyes, now you see it in your children. And how many children shall you have? 10,000 like a cockroach? Oh, the insect babies. It feels awful, and yet in the parent's senescence, having 1,000 brothers and sisters to help care for elderly spider granny is better than the lone elephant baby who must care take for the senescent pachyderm. Oh, little baby elephant that I gestated for, what is it, 8 years or something with an elephant? And then a solitary child. See, you want to spread it around. I shall have then many children, just like a biblical fella did. He said, I'm going to have many children, and they're going to be this like the stars in the sky, in that I won't know them very well, and our relationship will be distant. But when they get together, I'll imagine they form shapes, like cows or bears or something. What's that one? If you can't see the lines between the constellations, then you can't see the connections between your children. And I am the one who draws that line between the dots that are the belt of Orion. From there, you enjoy the middle part of your life. Golfing, or tennis, or pickleball, or something illegal, some illegal scheme or something involving money. Very complicated, but still illegal. I think what it is that you find out that a local municipality is going to buy some land, and so you buy that land first and then try to sell it back to the original owner, but now you've marked it up and you've got it rezoned because you paid off one of the commissioners, and it's technically they have to pay you 10 times what it was originally worth, but what you did is create a shell company, and then you put that in your wife's name, which turns out to have been a big mistake. And you should have realized that, because there's a little hint in the beginning of the poem that tells you don't do that. And I don't know where it is right now, but I know that it's there. And some of the hints that we find in poems are because they're acrostics. And the secret message is hidden on the left side. If you line up all the letters correctly, yes, it says, don't pay attention to this poem. But this one, who knows? Because we don't know where the line breaks are. So we just got to assume that the message is in there, embedded, like a word jumble, like a word find. How many words can you create with these 7 letters? Go. A, 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 A. Ah. I know what you are thinking now, I say to myself as I enter this last period, which takes a long, long time. I look back at what I've accomplished, and I can't see it because it's not there. I look in the newspaper. Surely I have a clip file that has all the highlights of my life. There it is. It's that time I said that quote in public, that quote that reads the only 2 times you want to be in the newspaper are when you're born, and when they wrap you up in it because you're a fish and being sent as an omerta message to someone. The only 2 times. But now you really want to be in the paper. Surely I did something important and they're going to write about it. This person is responsible for inventing that device on cars that allows you to watch planes landing while you are eating a hamburger. And they are also responsible for the letter P, which was not in the alphabet previous to their existence. You're the P person. I am none of those things you think now. Will they remember me? These children that I have had, they are now scattered to the 4 corners of the earth. They will not remember their parentage. They will not remember the fields of their youth. where they ran barefoot, lacerating their tiny little toes, because that's an ill-advised thing to do in a field you've never been in. There could be ground bees, or glass that was put there to cover the holes of the ground bees. Oh, you meant well. You always mean well. But sometimes those plans backfire, and things that you put in place to protect the ones you love come crashing down. Like the time that you locked your mother in the old-time freezer because you thought she'd be safe there, and also she liked I Love Lucy. And there's a famous episode where that happens, and she has icicles hanging from her, and we knew they weren't real. We knew they weren't real. Oh, Lucy, you are not frozen. That is not a snot icicle hanging from your nose. Oh, Lucy, so many times your nose was the brunt of a joke, not because it's a bad nose, just because you chose to do things with it, like put putty on it or something and then light it. Remember that William Holden episode where you put putty on your nose and then you lit the nose and the putty lit on fire and the nose began to melt? Well, I saw that as a child and it traumatized me, and I did not know that your nose was not on fire, and I believe that noses burn off when people smoke, and my grandparents smoked, and therefore I thought their noses would come off. And they would look like the funnels on the nose of the Tin Man. Do you know what I'm talking about? Tin Man? Funnel nose? Oz? Any of that sound familiar? Oh, I know not who created this world, nor who wrote all the fiction that I have read. But it is now the blueprint. It is the guide that they follow when they're telling me what to do and making the plans. Tell me where to find this book. And the librarian that I once consulted says, do we decimal system? And I said, I don't know, do we? And we laughed together. And the librarian sent me off, not to the books, but to the audiovisual section, because they have a vast library of things that aren't books, like VHS tapes and DVDs and CDs and 16-millimeter film reels. Yes, educational films in 16-millimeter that people used to use in schools. They had real projectors. I mean real projectors in both senses of the words, and you'd plug them in, and you would feed the film in there, and it would... And it would show you a film, and it would educate you about something.
These are the artists of the early 20th century. Creating art that enhances our lives.
And sometimes the film would stop. It gets stuck. And when it did get stuck, it would become exposed to the lamp that illuminates it for too long. And instead of shining a light on things and making a cohesive story, it begins to burn a hole in a frame of the film, and it begins to melt, and it creates some bubbles, and you see people's faces begin to distort or change, and a hole bursts forth, and it looks like a white black hole, a sun being born in the film. Quick, quick, unplug it. Quick, quick, save the film. Now, you can always cut that bit out and splice it together with tape, but that's what stopped the projector in the first place. That's what stopped it in the first place. Where are we now? Am I at the end of my life looking back? Have I forgotten? Am I still at the beginning of the end? Am I at the end of the end? No one knows for whom the bell tolls, because it's a bell. It's not a loudspeaker. If it was a loudspeaker, it would say, attention, please, Hardy White or someone is going to die. Now, how did my name get in that poem? Let me tell you, I just taken an aside right now. There's a part in the poem that says, your name here, your name here. All good poems will have that in them. Will have a little element that has a kind of Mad Lib flavor. It'll just have a blank spot that'll say adverb or name of your pet. That way, it's personalized. And you'll feel, hey, this piece of art is just for me. It isn't something created one size fits all. What are one size fits all good things for anyway? There isn't such a thing. Even a coffin isn't one size fits all. I mean, you could put a tiny person in a large coffin, but there's that fella. There's that fella that was too large for a coffin and was buried in a piano case, which is the one instrument you don't need a case for, and so perhaps they never really got a coffin for him. Oh, you can carry around almost everything. Even a stand-up bass has a case. But I have never been to a show where a pianist shows up with their piano case and then proceeds to unbuckle it and open it and whip out their Burzendorfer grand piano. Now, maybe you're saying there's the suitcase pianos like those Fender Rhodes or something that you can carry with a handle. A handle? Did you ever try to lift one of those? Did you ever try to lift an old portable TV that says portable TV and it's got a handle? They put handles on things that aren't intended to really be lifted, just as a way of letting you know it's not bolted to the ground, but it also is too heavy to move. That's why they put a handle on things. And you'll be told all your life, you need to get a handle on it, get a handle on it, you need to get a handle on it. You say, well, even if there was one, it would rip my fingers off, wouldn't it? Be too heavy to lift. The comedian George Carlin used to pose the theological question, can God make a rock so heavy that he himself cannot lift it? And this does sort of reflect St. Anselm's ontological argument for the existence of God, and that which no greater can be conceived. This is the very definition. So yes, no. So no, yes. No, yes, no. Listen, have you read Spinoza? You don't have to if you have a book of poems, if you have a book of poetry. You don't have to do that. Poets are as defensive about poetry as mathematicians are about math. And yet, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. You can put a man on the moon with math. But the man that you put on the moon with poetry is not there. Oh, but you say without it, he's not there. Yes, but we need, he's not there. No one's there. No one is there with the things that you make out of these poems, and yet you would not have certain things in you now, like a store unstocked. If you hadn't heard the story of the footprints of the dead chasing the young baby down the beach, and the dread that we are filled with, and the fear that comes from not knowing who these hideous faces are. Oh, they're my family, are they? Yes, they are. Ah, I was born into some kind of carnival? No, you'll get used to the human face. Right now, you're used to looking at not anything. And those eyes, you haven't used them before. Yes, I like not using them. Well, too bad. Here we go. And you don't have to use any of your senses. It's just a serving suggestion. You may do anything you want with your eyes and ears. They say, you know, it's what you put into your ears that matters. Like this radio show or raisins. Or Barbie shoes, or something else that might get stuck in there, stuck in your head. You may have the words of a famous poem about life. embedded in your head. Just like when you put a rope around a tree and you put it around too tight and the tree grows over the rope. Yep, it's stuck in there now. Whatever was in your ear is now embedded in there. It's impacted in flesh. Can you imagine that? Just like in a graveyard where the tree grows around the headstone. And you can't tell who's buried there any longer. But I think that can't say Shemp Howard, because I know that he's out in California. So who knows who it is? And we may never know. Also, I don't believe Shemp Howard died in the 1850s. But I'll look it up. Who knows how many repeats we've had, people returning and leaving from this earth. Now, this next part of the poem, this is me, I'm not reading now, I'm telling you. So that ends the first part. The second section is a very long part. It's the longest part of the poem, and it actually goes on for a good 300, 400 pages. And it's called, I've been in this line at the tax office so long, I don't remember why I'm here. And it covers the best part of middle age right there. So instead of reading it, all of it, because it would take longer than this show, I don't know how many hours it would take to read that. It's like one of these books on tape. What's the longest book on tape there is? I think you can get the Talmud. But there's other things, I'm sure. You can get someone reading the dictionary. And the book on tape I had was Steve Allen reading the phone book. It was a 1950s phone book, too. And it put me to sleep. It did the opposite thing it was supposed to do, keep me awake on a car trip. And yet, there's a lot of books that put you to sleep. So you got to make sure that things you listen to on those so-called books on tape, that's so funny, too, because it's just not even tape anymore. And now they're not even considered books. I don't know what you call them. It's so funny. Let's say you write something that's never been printed. It's only available electronically or voicily, vocalistly. What if you had a just spoken word book that was never printed, never to be printed either electronically or anything? It was just words. Well, you would call that Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. It's like a book. I mean, there's books that don't make any sense or sort of go all over the place and ramble or sometimes get to a point. But you know, if the point of the book, or rather the philosophy behind it, is sort of anti-story, then why would you possibly expect something to be cogent or linear or anything like that? Oh my goodness. No. This is an empty liminal space, a waiting area between art. You listen to this while you're going somewhere. That's why in the car is a perfect place to do it, because the car is no place at all. You're sitting there, yes, but you're moving forward. So if someone was to say to you, where are you? You wouldn't know at first. You could be a smart aleck and say, I'm in the car, but that's not where they mean. If you're on a road trip, they would mean, where are you geographically? And you'd have to say, just wait a minute, I've got to look on the map and see where I am. But the minute that you said that, it would just be like Heraclitus sticking his Greek foot in a flowing river. It's not the same river. And the minute you say where you aren't there anymore. Unless you really are. Like, I'm in Baconton. And then you're still in Baconton. Because it covers, you know, a couple square miles. Not huge. Baconton, Georgia. But it's, you know, you could be in it and for the duration of a phone call, if it was short. And you were moving slowly. And so that's basically what this section of the poem is about. And why read poetry at all? Isn't it a dead art? Well, there's lots of dead arts, like Carney. And I'm thinking some other ones. It's usually, well, we don't think of King Arthur as being an art, but it is short for Arthur, I think. Artie Johnson. Dead. Also dead. And you say, I don't know who these people are, friend. Well, you've got modern arts like art. I don't know who yours are, and you don't know who mine are, and I don't know who my grandparents' arts were. Carney,
But other than that, I don't know. And things disappear all the time. We forget how to do things. Why, radio is a perfect example. You know, there was a gap there where there wasn't any radio. It was a dead language, so to speak, and it was revived by people. What are you talking about? Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but radio was actually invented by the Romans. Well, not really the Romans. The Greeks. Well, not really the Greeks. Well, Hero of Alexandria, or Huron of Alexandria, invented radio. And that seems so hard to believe. But the thing is that once that technology was lost, I mean, not many people had it. I'm not trying to imply that everybody in the ancient world had a radio receiver and a broadcaster. You know, I'm just saying there was maybe one radio station, all right, in a temple, in a Greek temple. And I don't know who the god was. I've got to look it up. But I'm sure it had something to do. Philco? I don't know. But that's where they get some of the names associated with radio, or actually from this Greek period. So the Greek radio goes on and it disappears. Now, skipping 20th century, people are discovering crystals. And they say crystals have different properties. And they mess around with them. And some of them are radio. You can get radio stations on some of them. And they realize this. Also, people, certain dental things, like certain fillings and everything, will pick up radio signals. And this started happening. And they kind of rediscovered radio. Now, what's the first thing they did when they rediscovered radio? Who are we going to put on? And they went to vaudeville and things like that. And also religious rituals. Now, they didn't do as well. But the early ones, they had all sorts of animal sacrifices they would do. And baby namings. Not just that. All sorts of religious traditions participated, and some were more interesting than others. But they stopped doing that, and they said, we're just going to have theater and vaudeville. Now, some of the vaudeville acts were not going to do very well, were they? Like plate spinning, or bowl spinning, or ball spinning, or just any kind of real spinning where you'd have to see the spinning. Now, I could say, I'm standing here in the studios next to a person spinning a plate. It's remarkable. But that doesn't really work as well as seeing it, which is why no one really cared about the Hindenburg. It was the Hindenburg's crashing. It's like, I can't see it. You can cry and whine all day long about the humanity, Hindenburg's crashing. I can't see it. Bless you. I mean, it sounds like you're getting all worked up, but I don't know if that's real. So, when radio revived, the things that really worked were shtick. Theater and shtick. Now, not all theater. Because, you say, a lot of them thought, we'll put experimental theater on. So, well, I don't know that that's going to work. Because it might look good on Beckett, might be fine on stage. You go, what's that guy doing? Just sitting there. Now he's making a noise or something. But radio, and I know there's been Beckett on radio, and you're going to say to me, blah 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 blah, crap's last tape. But I'm going to ask you this: isn't there like a banana in crap's last tape? Now, what if you don't see the banana, he has to say it. And you don't know if there's a banana. I could say right now, I got all bananas all on me. You don't know that's true. And oh, bless you, my friends. I know it's so easy to want to believe and have faith say, oh, but faith is like it's a person's name. And I say, I know that. So is hope. So is, there's lots of things. Gus. What's that short for? Angus or Gustus Ofsesen or something? I don't know. There's lots of people don't always have. People think that all first names just come from their European tradition, but people all over the globe have names. My goodness. And some people don't. And by people, I mean individuals don't have names. I imagine, among apes, and I don't. They're probably not naming each other. They don't have a spoken language, just like a couple of you get the idea. Hey, you know, people go all day. No one uses my name anyway. I'm thinking about it. They'll go, hey, or hey, you, or good to see you. So we don't need names. And sometimes they get in the way and embarrass us. Like people, if you can't remember them. Like if you have trouble with faces and names, people think, oh, you've got problems. But it's neurology or something. Take away the names, maybe faces too. No, you can keep your face. Bless you. I don't know. What would be a good name? What's a good way to have someone remember your face? I wonder. How could you make it memorable? They always, if marketing people knew, they'd go around doing it all the time. But it's really difficult to really know how to hack people's memories. How do I get in there? How do I embed myself or something? I'll give you a couple hacks about how to get into people's memories, but sometimes they're not useful. What do you mean? Okay, for instance, you say, I can get into that house, but I can't physically get into the house, but I can get something, I can get a ruler into it. Okay, so that's not really getting into it, is it? So you can get into someone's memories with disgust. Pardon me, am I disgusting you? Here, let me hack up some phlegm. I think we're ought to describe that phlegm. That image might be embedded in your brain, in your memory, without your consent. And you might, depending on your nature, obsess on that horrible image. And say, like, oh, I just saw something terrible. I can't get it out of my brain. So disgust is a way of getting in there. Anger. It depends how you've got to really do it. People have a propensity towards fixating compulsive thoughts or something, and make sure that they pay attention, because attention is very important for memory. You can't kind of sneak things in through the back door. You want to, because of Subliminal Seduction, that book that made you think that if I put a naked lady in that ice cube picture, you're going to buy my scotch. But if you don't see it, you know, you don't see it. It'd be like, here's my example, magic eye. So I'm going to put a magic eye in that advertisement. And in the magic eye is my product. And they're not going to know why they're thinking about it. Not going to know why they're thinking about it. I can't see the damn thing. I can't get my eyes crossed at the right angle to see that. So that's the way I feel about subliminal things. I'm sorry, I can't see the ice cube. So if there's a naked lady in it, right now my eyes are so bad, there's naked people in every image somewhere. It's like, well, I don't know, I'm Mr. Magoo. Everything's porn when you're Mr. Magoo, I guess. What's that? What's that fire hydrant? That's the way it is now. So, perception has to do with it. Are you going to read the end of the poem? I am. I'm describing the middle part. And the middle part is about waiting in a line, doing something mundane and frustrating that doesn't seem to really have a purpose. That's most of your life. Most of your life is going to be carrying out these little side missions. And that's it. Most of your life is going to be waking up to a list of things you have to do that then will have to be redone in some way, shape, or form soon after. I always think that. Every time I take a pet to the doctor, I say, doctor, isn't it ultimately going to die? And they go, well, yeah, but like in 10 years. And I go, yeah, but I mean, 10 years, the last 10 years went by really fast. So everything has to be redone. I just did the dishes again. That keeps happening. Oh, my goodness. And then what if there were an afterlife, you say? And I was talking to my psychopomp. That's the docent you get when you get to the afterlife. And you say, wait a minute, I think I left the oven on. And you say, it doesn't matter any longer. And you say, well, neither do ovens. And you go, but what about food? You no longer need food. But what about, and you go, you no longer need anything. Well, why are we talking? I don't know. You're the one asking all the questions. I'm not asking questions. I just said I lit the oven on. All right, shut up. Where are we going now? Again with the questions. There's nowhere to go. All right. What? So afterlife, I notice you're not saying heaven. I feel like that's a red flag. All right. I don't know where one goes when one dies. I don't know where you are now. People say, do you know what happens to you when you die? My friend, I don't know what happens to you when you're alive. I don't know what this is. This is baffling. I try not to admit it too often because it makes you seem insane. But if you've led any sort of contemplative life and you've come to a conclusion, I'm going to call... duty. And the reason is, for the Heraclitus thing, I don't believe the problem that you began thinking about is the one that you're currently thinking about. I think everything changes and your goals constantly change. I'm a different person I was when I was young. I am no longer that scared child. Okay, I've started the poem again. I'm no longer that scared child on the beach. Oh, I look in the mirror now and my head has swelled. It has swelled to gigantic proportions, but really, disturbingly, not that much bigger than my child head. It's just more skull-like or something. I guess what happens is the fontanelles, those spaces in your skull, they begin to fuse. They begin to fuse and never go back again. You will never have that flexibility in your skull ever again. It is now sewn shut. It is written, the book has been shut. Your head is your head, and the flesh begins to melt off of it, and you see the underlying structure as everything begins to melt and sink, and the fat that once filled in the spaces that make up the ridges of your face begin to succumb to gravity, a force that is weak but persistent, a force that will drag us down eventually, that has time on its side and that needs time. Oh, I'll get you. A relentless pulling and tugging, just like a child does. What? What? Mama, 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 what? Oh, I forgot. I imagine that if God had that kind of relationship where God could speak, that would happen all the time. Well, maybe you say God can't speak. Then that's what God's saying. What do you want? And then you're saying, I don't remember. I don't know. I just need. That's what a child's cries are. What do you need? I don't know. You tell me. I just got here. I feel awful. What do you mean? I feel empty. Are you hungry? I don't know what that means. Do you want food? I don't know. Why are you crying? Again, I don't just feel, I don't know. I was complete and now I am not. And so they shove something in your mouth because they think, well, that'll do it. Because that'll complete the... That'll fill the... Everything is coming out of the mouth. So at least if it's not hunger, we stop the complaining. And we keep doing that, crying out. Cry out as an old person on your deathbed. You say, oh, Alice B. Toklas, come here. And you go, what? Gertrude Stein. And you say, What is the answer? Is that what she said? Something like that. One of them said that. One of them's dying, says, what is the answer? What is the answer? I imagine what they were doing, the puzzle. Because that's what I would feel. I'd love that. I'd say, well, you mean like the answer to everything, the meaning of life? No, I just mean I need some closure with this. I got to get the genius on the spelling bee. It's just one more word. Maybe I could get the pangram or something. Ah, yes. The word is meaninglessness. I love it. And now I can close my eyes and go. Goodbye. Go on to your reward or punishment? No. Let's just go ahead and hope there's neither. You don't want neither. So well, I'd love a reward. Yeah, but that's never what you want. Like when you're on a game show. You never win what you need. You win what they want you to have, what they have an extra of. It's like, guess what you won? What? Chrysler something. Oh. Mm-hmm. Chrysler Ventura. All right. Mm-hmm. 80, it's an 89. Chrysler Vantara. All right, I don't know if that's a real car. Well, you've won one, and now you own taxes on this thing you can't sell. All righty. What else did I win? You won a whole, this is the poem. The poem says, just a minute. I can't read the word. It's blurred because I cried on the text. You won an entire kitchen full of appliances in harvest gold or avocado green. Either one. If I get the avocado green, can it be repainted? What do you mean? Can you repaint an oven? Well, probably not the modern ones, but I mean the old time one. Can I take it and have it sprayed, enameled? Well, that's just a lot of work. Yeah, but can it be done? I guess. So it ultimately doesn't matter if I take the harvest gold or the avocado green, because I can have it customized. When I was a younger man, I believed that I could design a wrap for appliances and you wouldn't need to paint them, just the way you wouldn't need to paint cars if you could have a really good, efficient wrap that didn't bubble. Then you could paint all sorts of things, customize all sorts of things without slobbering this wet paint on it. Oh, that would be the future, I thought. But I couldn't get anyone convinced to take me seriously because I hadn't thought of it yet. And I didn't know that, and they didn't know that. I just knew that something was missing, the attention that I craved. I thought, I feel important. Why am I not being treated like that? Alas, I hadn't done anything. I just had this feeling that I should be rewarded. Well, a sort of entitlement just for being alive. Isn't this thing so hard that you want to throw me a small bone? Can't I have a hint or a little leg up? Do I have to guess at every single rule? And then, when I do put my faith in those who have been there before, they lie to me, or they steer me wrong. I feel like most of the great books of philosophy and religion have been manipulated in the way that the coyote manipulates the road sign so that it says detour with the arrow pointing left, and then he spins it so it says detour with the arrow pointing right, and it's definitely arranged so that we go over a cliff, and only because of our own suspicion and wits do we not go that way, because we know there are sign-turning coyotes in the form of false prophets, fake philosophers, pseudo-thinkers, who would have us careening off of cliffs with their bogus directions and their cheating. They want to fix the race. Yeah, just like the tortoise and the hare. Now, the hare eventually was killed by the German artist Josef Beuys, I believe, who then used it as a demonstration of what art is. But not the tortoise. It was able to continue on the race. And it kept going. And it died before it finished. But don't we all die before we finish? When the Lord sent Moses to the promised land, it turned out it was not a promise. It was a promise in quotes, because Moses was not allowed to step into it. And the Lord said, I never said you could go into the promised land physically. I said I'd get you to the promised land. And probably the confusion is in the original Hebrew as it's translated into other language, but really, I'm not messing with you, Moesha, but I really didn't say you could go in there, so I haven't really violated my promise, and you must now look into over there. That's where it's going to be. And sorry. And that's like a lot of us. By the time you buy that dream lot, you don't always get to build your vacation home.
I'm not going to get to build the vacation home now, but I can look upon that land where it might have been, and now no, but I don't know whether the children are going to want that, just sell it. I doubt they're going to build the damn home. I'm going to have to just fantasize about it as I die. I hope it's one of those things where I take that thought into eternity.
I wonder if that's the case, since you can never get on the other side of oblivion. Perhaps consciousness always stays in the moment. You will have no idea that the moment has ended, and it will be stretched into infinity. Just like a yellow millet dream. Just like Captain Picard when he had a yellow millet dream. Oh, sometimes episodes of science fiction series just borrow things from mythology whole and then just change the names. So instead of Schwangza or something, it's Captain Picard, but I would rather see Schwangza in a spaceship, like a Taoist Star Trek captain, just saying, let's go to Vulcan, and then on the way there going, let's not bother to land, because it doesn't matter. It's these moments upon moments upon moments. Is this the poem? What does it matter if it's the poem or not? What isn't in the poem about life? What isn't in that poem about being born and then living and then dying? What isn't in it? I'll tell you what isn't in it. Oh, will you, old-timer? Yes, I will. The recipe... Say it again. Try it again. Okay, one more time. The recipe for good bread.
You're right. It isn't in there. It's implied, but it isn't in there. What is the recipe for good bread?
Ah, that's something you can go looking for, and in your quest to find the answer to this, you will run into many people who you'll be glad you met, because ultimately you will share one of the most important... Where'd the old guy go?
I have to go. I have an appointment. Goodbye. I'm filming something like I'm like Bob Hope dropping into the Tonight Show.
See you, Bob.
Bye.
Bread is like the valuing of it is a very special clue to someone. If you find someone who values, not in a snobby way, but who really appreciates bread or understands, or when you say well-made bread or a baker that knows how to make bread or a baguette that's made perfectly or something, if in their face you see a light go on, a sort of glow happening, as if something got switched, and they began to imagine this desire, which is also a need, which is also a purpose, which is also a clue. Bread. Nourishing something that's going to ultimately just go away. Why feed the thing that will die? Why live the life of purposelessness? Oh, I can think of 1,000 reasons, and they're all I don't know. And that's wonderful to me, because every time I say I don't know, a blank canvas is created, an empty stage is created, a bit of silence is created, and only in silence and stages and canvas can things be really made. Only then can art manifest and beauty manifest. It must have a context in which to come and rise out of, to affect us from. Something must come from the darkness, some contrast, some light, or some darkness may manifest in an overwhelming sea of light, so that we can see beginnings and ends, and that makes the thing, and that makes the poem. And then within the poem, we enjoy ourselves. We can make anything we want inside of it. And so you know this is the ending, and you know the character in this poem probably is lying in some bed in a desperate state.
Like a desperate state?
No, no longer punning.
Maybe.
Maybe not. but now all hope is lost, but it's not. Because it doesn't matter either. And it's a bit liberating. Ah. I mean, it's kind of ironic that only now, as an old, old man lying here on my deathbed, I finally don't care about how others see me. I finally don't care. And maddeningly and ironically, they like me. But why couldn't you have liked me back then? Now you like me. Now you have my art is important to you. Oh, I see you're already planning a retrospective of my work and I won't be there. Oh, how convenient. I'm not there to say, no, you're getting it all wrong. That's not what I meant at all. Oh, just wait till the old guy dies and then dredge it all up and we'll have a party and we'll make it our own. And then I can just do it with Adam. We don't even need our publishers as a book. Yeah, now you got me out of the way. I remember I'm doing that with the minute George Orwell died. I remember I dug him up and made a George Orwell puppet and said, he speaks for me. Blah, 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 blah. The story stays in life. That we don't take with us. The myth stays here. Oh, the art stays here. It never was us. Please, steal mine when I'm gone. You can take it now. What do you want me to do with it? You don't know what to do with it. I always think about things like that when I get the packages I get at my house. I think, well, if somebody could steal this out the porch, they wouldn't even know what to do with it. It's a good 9 times out of 10, it's something that I don't even know what this is. Exactly. So why do you need it? And I feel that way. I am not often stolen from. That is both liberating and depressing. There's nothing to steal. Oh, what is it? Well, think about it. Like, let's say you go and say, what do you really like to do? I like to go over to my auntie's house, and she has this special kind of tea. Is it really special? Not really. She just gets it at Kroger. All right, but I like it. Okay. So I go over to her house, and she also has a special kind of bread. Is it really special? Not really. She gets it at Kroger. All right. And I go over there, and we talk about old times, or we talk about bowling. All right. Since everything is not special, really, and it can't be stolen. So I'm going to get in there and steal that tea. You can get it anywhere. It's a combination of things, of the ordinary. It's the mundane arranged in just a certain way. It's called composition. The composition of the ordinary. That's the most liberating thing. The unstealable treasure. The helmet of Don Quixote, which appears to be a wash basin, but is magical and grants him powers and sustains him and gives his life purpose. You have within you a poem, and it's a stupid one, and it's ongoing, and it doesn't rhyme, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's yours, and it's crazy, and it's valuable, and it is one of a kind, and it is precious, and that's insane, and that's an insane thought, because the real jewel of the universe is an insane, crazy time mess. Embrace it. Oh, be the whole poem. Live it backwards and forwards and forwards and backwards. Scramble it up. Live it out of order. Do the part where you're in line at the tax office as a baby. You should do that. Put a baby at the end of a licensing line and say, I'm putting the baby there now because I'm planning for its future. And by the time it gets to the head of the line, it'll be 22, 23, and that'll be good. But hadn't I not done that, oh, are you in line? You're in line for what? Being one of my favorite people because you listen to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, my goodness, freeform radio coming at you in a way that is, oh, both offensive and delighting and comforting. And, my friends, I want you to stay around for the next hundreds of shows, but pretty. Let's start with Mahogany, because then that'd be the easiest thing. Oh, bless you, my friends. I'll see you again next week.
Name was Ebony, her name was Mahogany. Twins 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 name was Ebony. Thank you.